Well, Matt Malone, former associate editor of America, who's now studying in London but is a student of American politics, thought we'd take a few moments to talk with you about the elections this week. Perhaps you could begin by using the title of the blog post you wrote this week, which is What Happened?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Yeah, a lot of people here in London have been at, because they know that I worked in American politics and that I write about it for America, have been asking me what happened, and I always say, well, that depends on who you ask, because there will be, and there already are, a whole range of narratives about exactly what the American people were doing and not doing on Tuesday, what they were saying and not saying. And I liken it to being at a, you know, to seeing a car accident. You know, if you interview all of the different individual witnesses, you know, they'll each give you a different story about what they saw. And sometimes, you know, the most you can say is, well, there was an accident, right? And so I always like to look at these things and say, well, what is it that we can at an absolute minimum say with some certainty, right? And I think a couple of things. One, it's obvious, right, that the electorate is mad as hell, and that is primarily because of the economy, and you know, Obama is currently the captain of the ship of state. Now, that's not to say that you know, that he's blameless, but it's just to say this is happening on his watch. And when you have unemployment that's over 9%, you know, people are going to be angry and people are going to be impatient. And then I think, you know, the second thing that we can say almost with certainty, given American political history, particularly in the last 25 years or so, is that people will likely over-interpret the results and construct a narrative that justifies more than the American people were licensing. In other words, what I mean is, this is like one of my little rules of politics, don't mistake a mood for a mandate, right? It's not necessarily the case that this is an absolute repudiation of every Obama policy and an embrace of the Republican platform, right, that was put forward by the congressional Republicans, let alone an embrace of the concerns of the Tea Party movement.
Well, maybe we can talk briefly about the Tea Party. What is the take of the Tea Party there, and what's your analysis of their rise?
It's interesting. I've been asked in Flemish, in French, in German, who are these Tea Party people? And because it's a very strange phenomenon to the European mind, they just don't, you know, they're just wondering what the heck is going on here, and who are these people and where are they coming from? And you know, I think that the folks on the left made two mistakes in vis-a-vis the Tea Party. I said the first was just to ridicule them, right? And we saw a lot of that during the course of the campaign. That was, you know, among other things, it was uncharitable, but it was also not very smart, right? Because it just energized those folks even more. And secondly, you know, it was even more foolish to simply ignore them, right? Because for better or for worse, I mean, they represent a very powerful voice in the American electorate that is saying that that, you know, rightly or wrongly, has a legitimate fear that all that they hold to be American, so to speak, is being eroded by this, you know, dramatically liberal president, and you know, a left-wing Congress. And, you know, it might be tempting or easy to dismiss this political hyperbole that's so much a part of that movement, right, and that perspective and that view. But there is at its core something of a deep and profound concern that I think resonated more with the average American citizen than it did with the political classes, right? I think the average American voter, though not necessarily associating him with the, though not necessarily associating themselves with the Tea Party movement, was able to sit back and say, well, you know, yeah, they're a little kooky, and, you know, they have some crazy ideas, and there's some stuff going on there that I don't like. But you know what? They're on to something. They're on to something. And people need, and, you know, I can see that.
Are there any historical parallels you can draw from this election to previous elections? I mean, there's been a lot of talk in this country about, you know, 1994, obviously, going back as far as 1948 with Harry Truman. Any other points in history you would note?
Well, I mean, those are the obvious ones, right? And what we know is that in 92 with Clinton, 94 with Gingrich, even 2008 with Obama, you know, the victors always tend to translate the result into a mandate, right? And to think that they have a mandate to govern in a radically new and different way. And we know that that's always a mistake, right? We know that from political history. People are going to do it anyway. We actually saw it today. John Bonnier was, addressing the press and said that, you know, the American people have said clearly that the president needs to change course, and change course we will. He said, quote, "I think it's a mandate for Washington to reduce the size of government and continue our fight for smaller, less costly, and more accountable government." It's not obvious to me that it's a mandate for that. For instance, one of the things that the Republican caucus has really worked up about is the financial reform that the Obama administration has implemented. And, you know, that's one of the things that they're going to try to repeal. But if you look at repeal in part, but if you look at the CNN exit polling, you see that the American people, you know, blame Wall Street for the economy. They said, who's to blame for the bad economy? Number one, the American people said, Wall Street. Number two, George Bush. Number three, Barack Obama. So it's not clear to me that a people who hold Wall Street primarily responsible for their economic situation are going to be interested in seeing them let loose again, you know, through a deregulation. I just think that there's a bit of overreaching going on there.
Speaking of President Obama, were you able to watch his remarks yesterday, and what was your take on them?
I thought it was very interesting. You know, he needed a bit more. Of course, you know, I thought immediately of Bill Clinton, that November morning in 1994, did something similar. And I thought that he actually needed a bit more Clinton, that kind of Oprah quality that Clinton had, you know, the biting of the lip and the, the sighing and all this business, where it was very obvious, you know, that, where Clinton could kind of emote, you know, you could know that you knew not only that he was saying that he had been humbled, but he actually looked humbled, right? And I thought that element was missing. But, you know, that's just not Obama. But, you know, overall, I thought that, to accept personal responsibility was obviously necessary, to acknowledge that, you know, there's been progress, but there hasn't been enough progress, and it hasn't reached enough people, I think was important. And the question is, you know, is it going to be possible for him to turn around his presidency in the way that Bill Clinton did in 94 and 95? And it's not obvious that he's going to be able to, because there are some key differences between them, right? One, the current recession is much deeper and much more profound than the one that Clinton was facing. Two, the way that Clinton rescued himself was to adopt Dick Morris's triangulation strategy, right? And that's a kind of politics as usual strategy that Obama has eschewed up until now. Third, Clinton's left wing was still intact and on board, right? The left wing of the Democratic Party is in revolt against the Obama White House, right? So if he does attempt to triangulate, what is this third entity that's going to be involved? And I think, lastly, it's not clear that Bonnier and company are Gingrich and company, right? That they seem to be a bit more smart, and you don't have Bonnier coming out and saying things like Gingrich did, you know, which is, I believe that I am a transformational figure and things like that, you know. So, and you don't have, there doesn't seem to be that kind of, while I think they're going to overplay their hand and see a mandate when there may not necessarily be one there, I also see among the Republicans a less of the hubris, right, that we saw in 1994 when, you know, Rush Limbaugh was broadcasting from Congress and, you know, all of those conservative radio people had moved into the basement and, you know, all that stuff.
And also, yeah. I mean, obviously Obama's dealing with a split Congress, whereas Clinton had the, he could play off against Congress because they, you know, the Republicans were in control of both houses, whereas now that would be more difficult for Obama to do.
I think that's right, yeah. I think that's right, yeah.
Finally, where do you think the Democrats go from here? I mean, they're obviously thinking about this and strategizing. What do you think the next step is?
Well, it's interesting. You know, the New York Times today had at least the online version, had a story about how, you know, the Republicans devised this winning strategy for Tuesday and implemented it over the last couple of years. And,
right.
Of course, you know, Karl Rove was, the architect, was supposed to be the mastermind behind all of that. And essentially, it was a strategy of no, and rather boldly, when all of, you know, when Obama won, the conventional wisdom said, well, the GOP cannot be can't just be the party of no. And Karl Rove and company said, well, actually, that's exactly what we need to be, because the purpose of the opposition party is to become the majority party. It's not clear to me that the Democrats are comfortable being the party of no, right? So I don't think that that's the strategy that they're going to adopt, and they can't when they hold the White House, right? So what do they do instead? And I think this is where the Clinton parallel is, I think, it does hold. I think there's going to be a return to a kind of more humble and incremental approach to public policy. They're going to hold the line on health care, right, because they fought for decades for it, and I don't think they're going to give much ground there. But I think you might see compromises around the margins of financial regulation and, you know, perhaps on the Bush tax cuts and on other, less important issues. But, you know, the era of big progressive reform and social legislation is over for the moment.
Well, Matt, we want to thank you very much for giving us a little analysis here, and
sure.
Look forward to your continued blogging on the subject.
Okay, my pleasure.